This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. We are going to start a new series here and tonight where I thought we'd start. We have got to start somewhere. So we're going to start in 1970 because A, it's 50 years ago. B, it's when we won the FA Cup. And C, it's when a lot of our generation began supporting the club. So we're going to go back and we're going to cover an entire season, talk about an entire season. And we're going to do every year going forward from 1970. But of course, we're starting with 1970 after this break. Right, welcome back. This is the Chelsea Fancast with me, Stamford Chidge, and Mr. Jonathan Kidd.
Buonasera.
And the Right Reverend Tony Glover.
Bonsoir, sorry.
What are you doing?
I've got a mute button, mate, right next to me, and I just didn't hit it quick enough.
Well, clearly not. Last but by no means least, the small but perfectly formed historian, Alexandra Churchill.
And Bertie.
There you go. Now, as I was saying before the break, in lieu of no football to talk about per se, I thought it would be great fun to go back in time and basically kind of look back at a season. And I thought, well, we could do it randomly, you know, which would be fun. But I thought, well, actually, why don't we? It's 50 years since Chelsea won the FA Cup this year, which for many of us was the greatest achievement in the club's history. Until, of course, we started winning everything a few years ago. Tony started supporting the club at that year. I know I was a bit younger, so I didn't, but plenty of others did. So I thought, well, why don't we start at 1970 and just keep going? You know, we've got 50 years to play with here and do it every week.
Going backwards from there.
No, we're starting in 1970 and we're going to present day.
He's so contrarian, isn't he?
He is. So there we go. So that's what we're going to do. And I thought we'll do it in two parts. First part, what I thought we'd do is we'll concentrate a bit like many clubs have to do. We're going to concentrate on the league. So we're going to have a look at the league campaign and we'll look at some of the standout players and some of the standout matches. But maybe, shall I start with you, Jonathan? I mean, I know I sent you all a list of... all the various matches and things. I have Bound of Frydale at my fingertips for any additional information that we need.
As do I.
As does Tony. So, you know, would you like to start, Jonathan? Where would you like to start?
I'd like to start with the picture you've sent us.
And I know it's radio, but it's a jolly picture of them all. Somebody said something very amusing. And I'll quickly go through the team in that picture, which I'm going to do without looking at the names, because I'm that kind of bloke. Hinton, Hutchinson, Webb, Hughes, Bonetti, Dempsey, McCready, Hollins, Tambling, Baldwin, Osgood, Hausman, Boyle, Hudson, Cook and Birchenell. And what a team that was. Quite fantastic. The talent there just bulges out. And Harris, of course, sitting on the ball. Sorry, Ronnie Harris sitting on the ball in the front.
You said bulging and ball in the same sentence.
I did. I couldn't.
Sorry, it's me and Tony. I had to point that out. Otherwise, we'd enough. Be it failing.
My subconscious was doing very well there. And interestingly, at the end of the season, bizarrely, both Birchenell and Tambling were sold to Crystal Palace, who had a kind of resurgent. I can't remember who bought them at the time, but somebody had a lot of money and was splashing the cash. And then Charlie Cook followed them the following season. And yet they never did terribly well there. Birchenell then, they bought Birchenell from Leicester. Birchenell was a character, as one would say in the 1930s. And he had an interesting kind of sort of mod barnet, which is a modern haircut, and had wore his sleeves on his shirt down rather like Dennis Law, so that he was holding on to the I'm doing this while I'm attempting to describe it. He held onto the cuffs, which sort of pulled the shirt down, which gave him a quite a sort of erect kind of persona. But he was a decent forward, but didn't play very much in this season. He only had 14 appearances. And Tambling was clearly on his way out, having been the greatest goal scorer the club had had, because Sexton, who was the manager, was clearly a very creative thinker, who'd been Tommy Docherty's coach before that, decided he wanted to play a certain way. And Tambling and Birchenell didn't figure, the two strikers. It just seemed a very strange thing to do for us fans who'd been weaned on the brilliance of Tambling, who only the season before had scored against Liverpool in the Cup and against West Ham. I was there, I remember at Upton Park, him scoring the winning goal, and was kind of their hero. So you have that kind of sinking feeling as a fan who doesn't really know what's going on. You know what it's like when somebody in the era where somebody you love gets sold. But a bit like Hazard, really. But in this instance, he went to Palace. So clearly, we were a team several notches down. So Sexton obviously had a view. And the view was, absolutely correctly, that he wanted to change the personnel. And Baldwin was obviously became a main feature in the side as a striker. And he'd been swapped with a little amount of money for George Graham. And once again, George Graham was a brilliant player and one of my favourite players. And once again, there is this hole when you're little in your heart, your best players being sold, in the same way that I really had a thing against Nevin when he was sold to Everton, because I loved him so much. And it's when you've got really class players, and the older I get, the more I can understand why it's happening, because of the tactics and whatever, or they're a bit past their sell by. But you remember them so fondly. And Tambling was such a great player. And this was his final season, and he didn't get picked for the cup final, and he was, because of course at the end of this season we won the FA Cup.
He didn't get a goal, did he?
No. Clearly there was something going on that Sexton saw. And and he played Hutchinson, who was a revelation. And he bought Hutchinson from Cambridge United, hadn't he? He was a non-league player.
Yeah.
And he, with his wonderful throw-ins. Interesting that...
Oh, and I mean it in the nicest possible way. What a weapon that throw-in was.
Completely. It's something that you wonder... I mean, who was it? Had it? Delap did it at Stoke all the time, didn't he?
Yeah.
You always thought, they're going to get a goal from this. And they did. Yeah. It was another string to the bow. And they were phenomenal.
It's the equivalent of a free kick or a corner when you've got somebody who can throw from the ball wherever. Like that.
And the amount of fouling that went on. You have to remember that the referees didn't apply the laws in any way near the same way. And, of course, we're having the horror of playing dirty leads all the time. And I said this on chatting to Chidge on Monday. Everybody hated Leeds, not because they were the best side. Mm. It's because they were complete filthy bastards, and he had Revy made them into a side that not only were they technically brilliant, so you'd wonder why they had to do it, they were appalling. They just kicked everything and everybody. So consequently, that's why we all hate Leeds and Leeds and Leeds. We all fucking hate Leeds and Leeds came about. Okay. And it wasn't just us who hated them. Everybody hated them. He was so hated. And the fact that then Revy ended up managing England when he had a very specific way of playing that you had no, there was, well, they were deeply talented, his players, but they weren't allowed to be talented. There was no room for a Maverick. You know, there was no room for a Worthington or a Bowles.
The hatred of Revy and Leeds was kind of funneled, wasn't it, by Brian Clough he wasn't your manager. He was Derby's manager at the time.
The interesting thing, chaps, was that Leeds were the top scorers in the division. They scored 50 goals at home and 34 away.
Yeah.
Nobody got close to them. In fact, actually, Chelsea were the only team we matched them for goals for away from home. So, you know, with all of their horribleness, immense horribleness, they were a bloody good side. Well, There's no doubt about that.
Mick Jones and Alan Clark were absolutely top players. They had top players. It was just they were absolutely regimented. You know, Bremner was brilliant. Johnny Giles, one of the best players in the league, possibly at the time, a really top European player. I mean, fantastic Irish midfielder, had originally played for Man United. I don't know why they sold him, but I can't remember the reason. But he and these other, Reaney was the England left back. And you had, I always felt their goalkeepers were a bit dodgy because, of course, they had Gary Sprake, who let the first goal from the cup final from Housman through his legs. But, of course, that the reason for that was that they'd been hadn't been the horse of the year. Show hadn't been there that year. It had been something else. That's the wrong story. I remember reading about that. It hadn't recovered. It was about several months beforehand, but the grass hadn't recovered. So the actual final itself at Wembley was played on this sort of soggy mud patch where the ball didn't bounce. So it slipped under Sprake's body from Housman's kind of.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about the cup in infinite glorious detail.
Can I sum up?
Let
me go through the team very quickly. I'd say Birchnell was a favourite. There's a wonderful picture of him kissing Tony Curry, the Sheffield United, another Maverick, brilliant Maverick player, who of course hardly ever played for England. Consequently, you've got Birchnell, who was a sort of fans' favourite, and he ended up being at Leicester, being their man on the pitch, their kind of spy equivalent, and great personality. Charlie Cook, of course, superb player. Alan Hudson didn't play in the cup final ultimately. Another superb player. Johnny Boyle, wonderfully competitive midfielder. Housman, given a hard time by some of the crowd who called him Mary, for goodness sake, I don't know why. But because he could be a little bit, I don't know, just not involved, but brilliant curling crosses. The king, of course, Osgood is good. Osgood, which was one of the chants. Osgood is good. Osgood is good. Who was completely phenomenal. Baldwin, who just known as the sponge. I think that was because of his drinking capabilities rather than his ability to soak up pressure. Who was, you know, just was always there or thereabouts in the setup. He worked in the kind of extra striker. Johnny Hollins, completely brilliant, non-stop. Only got one cap, for goodness sake. I mean, absurd. Brilliant youthful player. McCready, Scottish international. Superb fullback. John Dempsey, been playing at Fulham. Ridiculous haircut, but phenomenal. You know, just a really reliable centre-half. The cat, of course, Benetti, England international, who unfortunately that year in the World Cup came on and was under great pressure and lost against Germany. Tommy Hughes, very reliable goalkeeper, came in on several occasions. David Webb, signed from Southampton. It's absolutely... a brilliantly competitive centre-half. Hutchinson, who we've talked about, always there with a wonderful partnership with Osgood, tall, competitive. And Marvin Hinton, known as Lou, I don't know why, but as the other, he played centre-half and full-back. And, of course, in the front, sitting on the ball, Ronnie Harris himself, Chopper, who... could pass really well. That was one of his other attributes, as well as kicking people rather soundly in the nuts quite regularly. But a very astute mind Harris had as well, which people don't talk about. Very good midfield player. And that's the team. Absolutely wonderful.
Well, wonderfully set the scene there, JK. Thank you. Now, Tony, I've kind of been itching to talk to you about this because, of course, you know, I forget this. I mean, we've talked about it, fair enough. I can't believe I did. But this was your first season supporting Chelsea. So, I mean, how old were you? Or is that revealing personal secrets, which we should not?
Well, nine.
You were nine.
So I would have been nine in August 1970. So eight for that season. So 69-70 season, eight. So I was born in 61.
You remember a lot, though, when you're eight and a kid.
You're right. I mean, for me, I guess it was the first hint at what I would call idolatry. I didn't know what that meant, obviously, but it was the first time that kind of thing had ever happened to me. Because at school, I was, I would have been at what we now call junior school, probably the third year of junior school. I don't know, they call it year seven or eight or whatever. I don't know. Don't get it all these days. And football mad, absolutely football mad. And I'm now going to conjure up an image for you of we were never allowed to use proper footballs in the school playground for the fear of windows getting broken, etc. So we used to play with if you like, tennis balls, which had been smuggled into the school, and the favourite this was a sock ball. And it was basically a ball made out of old socks.
Of cloth, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
I remember them well.
Yes, and we used to play football with that. And so I was a young, aspiring, I think my favourite position was inside right or outside right. So in the days where you had five along the centre line, you had a right back, left back, centre half, inside, left half.
W formation.
Right half. Yes, that's right. And so I always fancied myself as a winger. I didn't know any footballers at the time. So about halfway through that season, I just didn't know. I started to sort of get an interest in watching Match of the Day. And I didn't really get the teams. But if there was a team that caught my eye, oddly enough, it was Derby County on the television. Because I think they played in white and had black shorts. But of course, everything was in black and white then.
Fabulous team.
Yeah. And it was Clough's Derby. You know, so this was a team that I think were, on the cusp of
O'Hare.
Yeah, on the cusp of those sort of things. But I didn't really have any allegiance to it. And it was as simple as the fact that I went through that season watching with interest and intrigue. And here's another thing, Cheech, and JK and Alex as well. I lived in a place called Hayes in Middlesex next to Heathrow Airport. I had no concept of that being London in any way, shape or form. Greater London, I don't care what you call it. I had no idea, because you don't. Yeah, London was a city, it was the capital. We knew that, but I didn't know it was, like 8 miles down the road from me, the centre of London. And I just remember at school, cup fever was building. All of the friends I can remember at the time wanted Leeds to win the cup. And it's as simple and as childish as the fact that the word Leeds, even though we didn't know how to spell it, meant leaders. Do you get that? Leeds, leaders. They're leads, they must be in the lead. Do you know what I mean? It was that simple kind of thing, because none of us had any idea of football. And I just remember going home, my dad coming in from work, and I was saying, Dad, the cup final's on, and who should I support? And he just said, and he was a bit of a, probably similar sort of accent to me, he just sort of went, "You support your local team, don't you?" And I went, "Okay, who's that? Hayes? They're not in the final, Dad, And he said, "No, it's Chelsea, innit? London team, innit?" That was my first conscious awareness of the fact that I lived close to London and that Chelsea were a London team. And so I, being the contrarian, the good contrarian that I was, I chose Chelsea amongst, probably the only one amongst all of my friends, eight-year-old friends, who were, plumping for Leeds because of the name Leeds. You then got the concept of the league and started to watch the Match of the Day. And the one thing that astounded me was that when the final whistle went, the players just went and walked off the pitch. Because when we won a football game at school, we were like champions. You were getting like chairlifted around the playground or around wherever. So it was very, very different times. And within a week of choosing Chelsea as my team, and rightfully so, because we had the royal blue kit, all blue kit. I think it was described as royal blue, even though it was probably not quite as dark as navy. But in that picture, that very picture that is there and on the Band of Friday page is the one I had on my bedroom wall. And I must have had six or seven copies of it, and then cuttings from the newspapers with pictures of Peter Osgood Hutchinson, Hudson, Peter Benetti, who was my absolute childhood hero, because I was a short ass. But if I wasn't outside right, I wanted to be a goalkeeper. And I just loved the idea that he was called the Cat. Why is he called the Cat, Dad? Because he can, you know, he's agile. He can, you know, jump like a cat. And that all that sort of is very romanticized version of it. But, you know, that's actually where the kickoff, everything came from that. And that picture on that is absolutely iconic, because that was on my bedroom wall for fucking years.
Well, that's brilliant, Tony. Now, Alex, you were yet to be conceived. I was only 5 years old in 1970. I'd be curious to know what, I mean, I'll share my perceptions of that team in a minute, but I'd be curious to know what yours is. Because, I mean, you know, even if you are really young, like we are delightfully are, if you support Chelsea, it's kind of ingrained on your historical conscience, isn't it? The Kings of the Kings Road side and how they won the FA Cup. So what was your perspective of that side growing up? Because, I mean, you've got a lot of Chelsea supporters in your family, haven't you, of course?
Yeah, but sort of dormant Chelsea supporters, not match going. I know who Peter Osgood is. I don't know. When I started supporting Chelsea, they were awful, and I didn't know one. I mean, I was like eight, and it was in the school playground, and no one was really talking about the 1970 team. They just liked the awful team we were then, and that's what I sort of went into, like the whole Kerry Dixon era or whatever it was. I didn't really have any comprehension of the 1970 lot until much, much later. I've met Chopper, as has everyone. And I do list my favourite game to watch ever is to watch reruns of the cup final, because they're just it's brilliant. Who doesn't want to see someone kicking the shit out of Leeds for 90 minutes? I mean, I hate, that's what it's done to my subconscious. I hate Leeds. They're scum. Yeah. Don't ask me why. I've got no explanation, but they're filthy, dirty Leeds.
That's brilliant.
It's
going to
be very interesting
put.
If football carries on, or if they come up with a way, if Leeds are promoted, fuck me, nothing's got stopping me getting a Stamford Bridge for that game.
No, me neither.
We talked about it on.
It's a rivalry there, which
a couple
matches
of weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think it matches any of the teams that we play right now for sheer.
Well, we were on there, and they were laughing at us, saying that we said anyone who's Chelsea. What me and Dan Silver said, anyone who's Chelsea wants to see them come up, and the host
yes.
was like, really? Of course, yes. All of us, everyone wants them to come up.
Anyway.
Why? Because we hate them. And he was like, okay.
No, I don't want them to come up. I want them to suffer by failing to get up again. I like that.
No. Let them come up and get the shit kicked out of them and go back down again. That's
down
better.
Again. Okay, good idea. Yeah.
All right. I'm just going to kind of finish up our little chat about that great team, because I got the stats out about the entire squad of that season, and I was really surprised with what I found, actually. For example, I forgot that Ian Hutchinson, you know, scored 22 goals that season. Mm. I knew that Ozzy had an absolute blinder, but I forgot that he'd scored 31 goals that season. But I was also really surprised by the fact that Tommy Baldwin only played 23 games. I was surprised that Johnny Hollins and Peter Housman played the most games with 54.
Mm. He was a sub a lot of the time, Chidge.
What, Housman?
Baldwin.
Yeah. I mean, he'd been at the club for 3 or 4 years by then, so I was still surprised. But he did pick up a few injuries, didn't he?
He was never my favourite player. He contributed, but you never thought, and he was a cog, but you never thought he was as good as some of the great players in that side. And Johnny Boyle didn't get in very often. In fact, he got in the following season and played in the Cup Winners. He was been there since 66. But
You're right. Johnny Boyle. But I knew this, because when I interviewed him the other week, he was saying that he was a bit in and out then. But, I mean, the mainstays of that side that season were Peter Benetti with 48 appearances, Charlie Cook with 43, John Dempsey, 48, Ronnie Harris, 41, Marvin Hinton, 32... Hollins and Housman, 54. Alan Hudson played 37 games that season until he cruelly got injured. Ian Hutchinson, 35. Eddie McCready, 39. And Peter Osgood, 46. And David Webb, 46. So that was the mainstay of the squad, really, I think, used
yeah,
that
yeah.
season.
I think also, I mean, Alan Hudson, I mean, it was terrible what happened to him that season because he was on the verge of becoming our George Best.
Yes.
He was that good.
Wonderful.
He was that good. And he matched George Best everything. Looks, he had the swagger, he had that kind of Beatles aura about him, you know, and so for him, I think he had a broken leg, didn't he? As I recall, I think it was very
ankle.
Serious. And broken ankle, was it? Yeah, very serious and you know, heartbreaking for him. JK's gone through the players, but you know, they were standout players. But Ian Hutchinson was one of our most underrated players, even to this day.
Yeah.
You will talk to people and go, oh, he was just a bloody donkey, or you wouldn't. I'll tell you what, you had to see him in full flow, you had to see his whole aura on the pitch. You know, the fact that we were FA Cup winners that year comes down to that throw. Just go, I urge anybody who's not watched it, go and watch that final goal, which was the first time in the entire final we'd gone into the lead. And look at where Hutchinson starts that throw and where it ended up. It is phenomenal. I've said it before, I see all this poncing around, all this fucking dressage at short corners and wankery that goes around that, right? And I'm like an ultra traditionalist who just wants to see the ball get launched in there, someone on the end of it, bang, you know, the beard, Giroud or someone, get the ball in there. You've got a free cross, for fuck's sake. And we don't see it anymore. We don't see the long throw as part of the game anymore. It seems to have been designed out of the game by the dressage monkeys who just want, you know, oh, I just want beautiful tappy football. And yet that was so phenomenal. And Ian Hutchinson, a real, real hero for me.
Anyway, brilliant, Tony.
Dressage monkeys.
Yeah, I like that. That one's going in the bank. Not the wank bank, that, but the bank.
No, I love that someone slated JK for being miserable last week. Well, you asked for miserable.
Yeah.
Miserable?
When? Ivanovic. Did you not see that on Twitter? Yeah, no. Of course, said you were turned into an old misery.
I didn't. I missed that. I tend to miss these things. I think I've got
to... Yeah, but Ivanovic used to do the long throw. We did a bit of it recently.
All right. Let's look at some of the games because there were some phenomenal games this year. I mean, the first thing I would say was that we started off appallingly. We lost 4-1 to Liverpool in our first match up there. We then lost 2-0 to West Ham up at Upton Park. We then won our first match by beating Ipswich Town 1-0. And then we had four draws, drawing against West Ham, Southampton, Spurs away, and then Palace at home. We drew all of those matches. But actually, the thing that really, the season for me kind of got going in October, and I was just struck by how similar these patterns are, aren't they? And then we went on a really good run. We beat West Brom, Newcastle away, Coventry at home, Sheffield Wednesday away, and then we drew with Everton, who ended up being the champions that year at home. Ipswich again, we beat them 4-1 away, and then we drew with Forest and beat Man United up at Old Trafford. And then we lost 1 against Wolves, and we got absolutely hammered by Leeds. But other than that, we were unbeaten pretty much from the 18th of October until the 28th of March, which is a phenomenal run, even by the standards that we're in now, JK. And I thought the parallels with it were really interesting there, because, of course, I'd forgotten all of this.
Well, I remember that when they started, I think they had 4 points, didn't they, from about the first 8 games.
We were about 13th position.
There were lots of people saying, they're all in the pub too often. And in fact, you could meet them in the pub at the end of the game. So there was an element of truth in that. But all the knives were out, except obviously not with Twitter. You only encountered that in with your discussing it, you know. They all thought, everybody thought Sexton would be sacked for a period at the very beginning there because they were doing so dreadfully. But it's the kind of environment where, unlike the media pressure, he was just given an opportunity to carry on with it, and he did. He was a very, very good manager, Sexton, as was proven by the fact, of course, that when he got sacked, he just nicked a few Chelsea players and then started managing Queen's Park Rangers. And they were, in 76, they were second and they should have won it. They should have won the league that year. That was really down to him and his planning.
Any standout matches in the league from that season, JK, for you, that you really remember vividly?
Well, I'd have been present mostly at the home games. I have to say, I...
Didn't you go away as well? What?
I never went away then, no. No, it's because school...
Well, pussy. You
know, excuse me, I wasn't at school still. I know.
I know you were like five, yeah.
Excuse me, no, I wasn't. I was 15, actually, but... no, my mum wasn't very keen on me going away, which I thought was fair enough, you know, protection.
But in those days, it's not entirely...
Anyway, look, so were there any particular games you remember?
Leeds United at home.
Which one, though? Because, you see, I've just looked down here, and I forgot this as well. But again, my excuse, of course, is that I wasn't there, so I'm not going to beat myself up too much about it. But we obviously lost to Leeds in the league, didn't we? 2-0. Quite early on. And then what I didn't realise is that this was in September. Mm. And then we had to play them again away the same week, 4 days later in the League Cup. And we drew 1-1 then. And then, of course, we would have had a replay. And then we beat them 2-0 at home. So were you at the 2-0 at home?
Yeah, I've got it bound to have been. Yeah, no, it was the 5-2 that we lost was the big one.
In January.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I remember that because I remember the pain that created was just absolutely appalling. I mean, really, just, bloody hell. Because losing to Leeds, but them scoring five. Oh, God. And that was the problem for the cup final. There was always that memory that they'd absolutely stuffed us, even though we'd beaten them in the League Cup. So there was a kind of fear going on that we still, you know, they might score five against us. When you're little, that's what happens. Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. I because obviously this Bound of Friday is such a wonderful... It is. And then you look at some of the stats that came out of that, you know, that the average age of our team that day when we lost 5-2 to Leeds was 23.8. Our oldest player was 29.7. Our youngest player was 18.5. And I'm looking at this the fact there were 57,221 people in Stamford Bridge. And I bet it was more than that because in them days, people could sneak under turnstiles and stuff, couldn't they?
I used to get carried in when I was little. So,
yeah. I mean, it's just incredible to think back, you know, to that time, which is my introduction to football. So I think it was the following season I went to my first game at Stamford Bridge with my cousin, which I'm pretty sure was Derby County at home the following season. I think that was the season we won the Cup Winners' Cup, wasn't it, with the two games against Real Madrid in 2 days or something like that. I mean, this was... You know, the one of the things about this team was it promised glory, and then the West End came along and basically fucked the whole thing up. But you know, we were on the threshold of greatness. I think that Cup Winners' Cup was the last thing for 27 years, wasn't it? Proper trophy, I think. The following year, but this was. Wonderful. But I'm harping on about it, Itch, but it would be impossible to over romanticise that team. And that league and that period of time for football.
Tony, can I just read this out from... this is from the papers after we got dubbed 5-2 by Leeds. The headlines are just hilarious. Suicide, Chelsea's boob. Sorry, Tom. Talking of boobs, Alex. Sorry, Tom. and this is what they said. Chelsea are out of reach of any title ambitions because somebody blundered. They sent out against Leeds United, the finest club soccer machine in the world, a sick man. Tommy Hughes was obviously unfit when he made two plunging dives in the first 5 minutes and twice completely missed the ball. The blame is not with Hughes. He may have been overcourageous in agreeing to stand in for fellow flu victim Peter Bonetti. When it was clear that Hughes was unsettling probably the best side Chelsea have ever paraded, he should have been mercifully excused and replaced by the young giant, 17-year-old six-footer Alan Dovey. So the thing that's interesting from that is that, of course, Peter Bonetti was out injured, one of the best goalkeepers in England, because he had flu. So isn't it weird? We're in the middle of a flu epidemic, yes. Coronavirus, and Chelsea lost. Basically, Chelsea lost to Leeds because they had flu. I think that's what we can safely say.
Yeah.
But isn't that amazing? Any other... Tony, do you remember any games vividly from that season?
Do you know what? The ones I pick out are that game, because it was, it was another match of the day... when, as a kid, you could justifiably watch things through your fingers. And also, you often didn't know the score. So, at my age, you know, I think there was one newspaper that you could get the evening results from. And if you'd missed them on the telly, because football didn't have the depth of coverage, so, you know, it would get read out, at 5 o'clock or whenever the results came in, and that'd be all you'd hear about it. I mean, there was no Five Live then. There was no dedicated sports radio of any kind. Once it was over, it was over. And so, you know, we're relying, you know, I was, you know, a cousin's wedding, relying on an evening newspaper to come in and tell me the score that came from Ipswich or something, I seem to remember. All these things were kind of vagaries. And of course, they're on the cusp of my memory now, because obviously, you know, this is 50 years ago. You know, I will always remember the fact that, you know, that Leeds United team, we went into that final very, very much the underdogs. Now, when my dad was telling me that Chelsea were my local team and I would support them, he had mentioned the word underdogs, and I didn't know what that meant. You know, like any 8-year-old, what does that mean? And he said, that's the team. He said, that's because nobody thinks they're going to win. Time, or Anthony, as he used to call me. That's because the team, Anthony, Chelsea, nobody expects Chelsea to win that game. They are very much not expected to be the holders of the cup. And what fucking reason? If nothing else made you think you're born into Chelsea, you look back and think, yeah, I fancy that odds. Because he said, not typical us. There was almost every person my age I know will go to any final, any of the games in this period of success, praying that we don't lose, but not being overly dependent on the fact we won't. It is inbuilt into anybody who started supporting Chelsea in the 70s that you just kind of have this fucking, we're going to lose this. We're the underdogs in some way or another. It is that. And that's hung over me ever since, you know. And that's why I've often said to people that day we had to beat Wigan beat them by a bigger score. You know, we won 8-0 that day, but I only relaxed in the 88th minute when we were 6-0 up. I thought, fuck me, we might have won this league. And it's a hangover from them days. Yeah, but that Leeds United side were brutal. They were, and you can't underestimate. Football was very different then anyway. I mean, you know, they were still playing with laced up footballs back in them days. So, you know,
orange,
it was
orange football in the final.
Oh, yeah, it was, yeah. Yeah. But no, I think also that's where my inbuilt. I never had the hatred of Tottenham that everybody else seems to have now. Because for me, the team that always kicked sand in our face more than anybody else was Arsenal.
Oh. Well, yeah. Talking of Arsenal, Tony, because that's a game I really do want to pick out, which was in, again, September. Funnily enough, the 3 days after having played Leeds twice in a week. They hadn't played, in the league we lost 2-0 up there, and then in the League Cup we drew 1-1, and then 3 days later we played Arsenal at home. But of course this is on YouTube. I know this for a fact, because when I interviewed Tommy Baldwin, this is one of the goals that I talked about, and I think it was on YouTube today, wasn't it, JK?
I haven't seen it, Judge.
Well, you tweeted it.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Dementia's kicking in. But it's. I know. We saw it on Twitter earlier on. But you know, basically, Birchnell scored 2 goals. Baldwin scored the third one on 85 minutes, and we beat Arsenal 3-0. Tony, do you remember that?
Yeah, very vaguely. And I think I've got to tell this story. It's because one of my friends at school I used to play football with, and we could all see he was going to be a goalkeeper, you know, he would eventually become our school team goalkeeper. Was a guy called Graham Moody, and he was an Arsenal fan, and he'd spent all of his time telling me how great Arsenal was. Where I lived in London, that part of London, hazy Middlesex as it was when Middlesex was an actual county before it became under Hillingdon, Ludborough Hillingdon, you were still part of Greater London, although we had no realisation of that at the time. But it now, like, you know, it was a couple of years later that it dawned on me why so many of my friends' dads, for example, supported QPR. Because actually, they were the closest team to where I lived. Or Brentford. Yeah, those were the two teams. Arsenal was Spurs. That was complete anomalies. But that was because people had moved from those areas. This is when football was not only... It certainly wasn't global. So you tended to support the team that was in the closest to your area back then. It wasn't in the same way as it is now, and so at the time, I had this massive dislike of Arsenal, and also because Graham Moody was a far better goalkeeper than me, as he would be because he was about a foot taller than me, as well. So it was all these little things that you kind of that build on your character through life, you know. But you know that my overriding memory of those league games, right, was why the players, I could never understand why the players didn't celebrate the 90th minute with a win by cheering and being walked around the pitch and chairlifted on wrists. I just didn't get it. Why did that only happen in the
school, Tony? We didn't do that at school. We just went, well played.
No, very different. Yeah, very different, you know.
What did you do, Alex, when you scored a goal at school?
I used to get really self-conscious and just stand and do the little fist bump thing.
Did you?
Like, I used to clench my fists and just do the, yeah. I was not an extrovert at goal celebration, so I used to just, like, to stand and do the thing. That was about
it's
it.
A bit of an Alan Shearer, sort of like just run around with your hand up and you're going, I've scored, like, you know, no.
Because I was like, you know when you see defenders score and they go, fuck, what do I do? That was like me. Oh, I just woke Bertie up. Sorry, I didn't mean to shout that loudly.
Well,
Bertie.
You can go and shush him to sleep because we're going to go to a break, and then after the break we're going to come back and we're going to talk about Chelsea's FA Cup run, which of course concluded with us beating Dirty Leeds in the final up at Old Trafford. But before that, just a quick plug for our Patreon channel. If you want to become a Chelsea Fancast patron, help us cover the costs of running loads and loads of shows. I mean, you know, it's the 500th next week, so we've been doing it for a while. You can easily just donate whatever you want, really. There's no pressure. You don't have to do it at all. We're not begging. You know, it's up to you. But if you do want to, it's very easy to do. Just go to www.patreon.com/ChelseaFancast. And a massive thank you to everybody who does. It's so hugely appreciated. And it's also a good way to keep in touch with us because you can send me messages and I actually do see them. And occasionally I respond to them. And occasionally we put little bits of exclusive stuff up just for you. So there you go. Now, after the break, we're going to be talking about Chelsea's 1970 or 69-70 FA. Well, actually, no, it was 1970 because the first match was on the 3rd of January. So we'll be talking about that.
Fans, real opinions. I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to the Chelsea Football Fancast. Up the Chelsea!
Footballfancast.com.
Right, welcome back. This is the Chelsea Fancast, and we are in the middle of, and I say we, that'll be Jonathan Kidd. Tony Glover. And Alex Churchill. And Bertie. We are in the middle of talking about Chelsea's 1969-1970 season. We've just done the league program to death. And by the way, what I should have mentioned really to close that out was that Chelsea actually finished in third position in the league that year. We got 55 points. We were behind Dirty Leeds, who had 57, and Everton were the champions with 66. Points. So we had a damn good run, but it was that, as I said, it was, you know, post kind of October, November that we started getting on a run and we did very, very well. But of course, everybody remembers this season because, of course, this was the season that Chelsea won the FA Cup and their campaign started at home against Birmingham City with a nice juicy 3-0 win. Who scored the goals? Osgood scored on 42 and Ian Hutchinson scored on 78 and 89 minutes. Jonathan, I would imagine you might have been there.
I think I was.
Do you remember much about it?
No. I remember Birmingham playing blue and white. And I think that season they wore... Cause, I think Barry Bridges was playing for them because he'd played the year before and we lost. Or was that 68? I can't remember. And I'd been there with my dad behind the goal and Pickering scored with the header. I think it was 69 and it was utterly depressing because Chelsea were all over them and should have beaten them easily. But yeah, they weren't a bad side, Birmingham. Yes, I think Bridges was playing for them. They hadn't gone to Queen's Park.
He wasn't.
He was at Prince Park.
No.
Oh no, that's right. He's in the. Who was? He must have gone to Rangers by then. But I've got no recollection whatsoever.
Tony,
I was. Yeah, sorry.
No, that was just before. I kind of got into it, I suppose, at that point. My first one I would have remembered, and purely, again, because of it would have been either, it might have been the big match. It might not have been Match of the Day. Anyone remember the big match? That was ITV's equivalent. That's the one. Yeah. And that would have been because Burnley, it always confused me that they had the same coloured shirts as Aston Villa and West Ham.
Do you know what? Do you know what's really funny about this? I'm reading the press cuttings now, and it just shows the variance of journalistic coverage even those days. It doesn't say what papers they were, but this is by Patrick Collins. He says, the ease with which Chelsea dismissed Birmingham's cautious cup challenge emphasised their position as London's most authentic Wembley prospects. John Jenkins says, Chelsea, second favourites for the cup, were so far ahead in technique and ideas that only Birmingham's unlimited courage and appetite for work made this tie any sort of contest.
Wow.
George Cranfield says, no, I'll go to this one. Morris Smith says, the headline is, two-goal hutch makes it look respectable. And Morris says, don't count this as a thumping Chelsea win. London's 1970 trendsetters should have had an armchair ride, but they were hitchhiking home until young Ian Hutchinson came up with a couple of goals. So basically, and Chelsea win through after let-offs, says somebody else. So basically, there's a kind of a bit of a mixed review of it. But the bottom line is we put them to bed 3-0. Yeah. Fairly.
Was Pickering playing for them? Does it say?
No.
He wasn't?
No. Nope.
Cheech.
JK. In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chich, I'd be bereft, inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep. NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow. Great. But yeah, I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK. And best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Ginge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Chelsea Fancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Anyway, Burnley. We then had Burnley in the next round, and we had them at home. Do you remember this, Jonathan?
I was there, but I don't remember it.
Tony? No, it's before your time, really, because you... Yeah.
It was, but it was... and I'm pretty sure my memory of it is probably from the big match, for whatever reason. And the reason is they had a player who called Ralph Coates. He's probably the most famous Burnley player of all time, who had a bigger comb over than Bobby Charlton.
Yeah,
he did.
I remember that.
Back then, Burnley weren't the... there's a bit, you know, there's still this degree of them being, you know, today, despite being, you know, reasonably successful sort of mid-table side or whatever for a couple of years in the Premiership. But back then, they weren't a cannon fodder team. I think they were one of the league's founders. So they had they were considered a kind of rich history of a team, you know, a sort of sleeping giant, even though, you know, with the ground with about 5,000 people or whatever, and a town of about 6,000 or whatever. So they were a bit mysterious, if I'm honest with you, back then.
But they
played in claret and blue, and that was massively confusing for a young boy of 8, you know, That they, you know, again, how could I have had any concept of where Burnley was? And I know from the fact that the first game at Stamford Bridge, and I do remember this guy because he was a legend in the refereeing world, was Jack Taylor.
It was indeed, Tony. Bloody hell. Yeah, it was indeed. I mean, it was a bizarre match because we were, again, streets ahead. We were 2-0 up with Hollins and Osgood 67 and 69 minutes. And then we kind of let it slip. And Dobson scored a brace on 80 and 88 minutes. And the papers were somewhat scathing about it. Chelsea forget about Dobson, says Peter Barnard. It couldn't happen to Leeds. That was my first thought as Chelsea threw away a 2-goal lead to make nonsense of their reputation as the South's only totally professional side. Dynamo Dobson wraps double blow by Peter Windsor. Two last gasp slashes of brilliant opportunism from defender Martin Dobson caught Chelsea flat-footed.
Yes.
And Chelsea stunned by Dobson goal burst. Chelsea looked anything but FA Cup second favourites as they stumbled to a 2-goal lead and then tossed it away. And so it goes on. So there we go. We ended up having to go up to Turf Moor for the replay. But the replay was a much easier affair. We won 3-1 up there. Your mate Ralph Coates scored on 35 minutes, Tony, to put Burnley 1-0 up. And then Peter Housman scored on 72 minutes. And actually, what am I talking about? This went to extra time.
It did. Yeah.
It went to extra time because Baldwin scored on 92 minutes and Housman scored on 116 minutes. So it sounds like we scraped through this one. Did you remember this at all, JK?
Yeah. I remember listening to it on the radio. And I remember, that. Yeah, Baldwin scored in the last minute and we thought we were out of it. And there was lots of whooping in the Jonathan Kidd bedroom at the time. And then Housman got two in extra time. And if you look at the number of goals he scored in the FA Cup, he was really other than Osgood, obviously, he scored in every round, thus making history. But Housman scored six, didn't he, I think, in the cup run. So the people who had the knives out for him were being very unfair because this was... he contributed hugely to the cup run. But yeah, there was that terrible thing of hanging on when your team, you know, we all know what it's like. You need one goal to win and you actually get it in the last minute. The relief knowing that you're going to go into extra time with the possibility of winning the game. Oh dear. Yeah, no, I remember it very well.
You're right about Housman, JK. He scored six goals in the FA Cup, which is no mean feat at all by anybody's standards. Great headlines again. Extra time drama. Chelsea. Housman grabs two. Housman double cheers Chelsea. Peter Housman sent Chelsea soaring into the fifth round of the FA Cup last night with two priceless goals. Chelsea survived an hour of torment by Ralph Coates to snatch victory in this fourth round FA Cup replay last night. So basically oft forgotten, but we kind of got a bit lucky and we scraped through. And you know what they say about luck in the FA Cup.
Indeed.
Maybe our name was written on the trophy, or maybe it was too early to say that. Anyway, we had Palace in the next round. That was a pushover by all accounts. 4-1 to Chelsea. Osgood, Dempsey, Housman and Hutchinson all scored. Looking at the Palace side, no Bobby Tambling yet. Taylor was playing. That's interesting. No Don Rogers, who I interviewed once, who played for Palace. So there we go. Any of you two remember much about that match?
No, not at all. There, no.
I don't remember. I was definitely at the Rangers game coming up. I didn't make the... you carry on. I'm getting ahead of myself. I remember Palace being very easy. I remember that. It was we were all over them.
Well, they were not happy bunnies, apparently. Fouls, claims angry head. Palace boss Bert Head, or also known to his friends as Dick, protested after his side's cup exit. I thought the first and third Chelsea goals were the most blatant fouls I've seen. The players were also annoyed about the fourth goal. So no lemons for Bert there at all. None whatsoever. Isn't it funny that Palace, the perennial whingers, were even whinging 50 years ago? This is what we want to see, really, but there you go. Anyway, so we're now into the next round, the fifth round, and this was Queen's Park Rangers away. Easy for me to say. Queen's Park Rangers away, Jonathan. Actually, no, this is the quarterfinal. What am I talking about? Now, you do remember this one, and I would imagine you remember this with good reason, JK.
I was there. but I don't remember it to the degree that you think I do. I need to have my memory nudged. I do remember that. When you nudge my memory, like saying that Dobson scored the two goals at the Bridge, I remember that now you've mentioned it, because he was a very good player. And I remember once again the pain. This is the trouble with going back into time like this. The pain of being 2-0 up and then having two goals scored against you in the last few minutes. Oh, good.
Jonathan, if I tell you, right, that the result was 4-2 to Chelsea and Chelsea players scored all the goals, it's kind of a sneaky thing because that's obviously not true. But basically all goals were scored by players who were either playing for or had played for Chelsea.
Venables scored one and Bridges scored one.
Very good.
Yes.
Very good. That was actually...
Where did that come from? Where?
Well, that was... There we go. Well, that was quite a handy QPR side. Clement, Gillard, I remember these growing up. Barry Bridges and Venables, obviously. Rodney Marsh was playing for them as well. So they were quite a decent side. And Les Allen was their manager. Goodness gracious me. And of course, I know Martin Allen, who I think is his nephew. Anyway, the most notable thing about this match, Tony, was that Peter Osgood scored a hat-trick. 8 minutes, 43 minutes, 58 minutes, Tony.
Yes. Well, I mean, there's nothing you can say about Peter Osgood. He, you know, loomed large, as they all did in my life, but alongside Benetti and, you know, Hutchinson, Peter Osgood was the man. Wasn't he? He was, you know, the confusion on a young boy's face that he wasn't our number one striker for England come Mexico 1970.
That was awesome.
Having a season that he'd had. I think he was in the squad. I can't remember rightly, because I definitely remember having one of those Esso petrol coins with Peter Osgood on it. I'm sure he was in that squad. But Alf Ramsey, yeah, as we all know, didn't really, he didn't seem to take any liking to Chelsea players, full stop, really. But he seemed to have even less regard for a man who was massively in form. And, I've got my FA Cup final story of Peter Osgood and the impact he made for me in that. But, you know, this was also against arguably our biggest rivals in Queen's Park Rangers. They were, for me, obviously, you know, I was almost like I was in the viper's nest of QPR fans where I lived. Peter Osgood, this team were looming large. In the back of my mind, the decision about being there, a supporter of them, wasn't quite there. But there was this inkling that there was something about them, Chidge. I can't put my finger on it. There was just something about that team. It was the kit. It was everything to do with them. But Peter Osgood, you know, 8:43 and 58. Oh, wow, what a player.
Well, I'll tell you what the other thing is and I don't know this because I wasn't around, but this is what I've picked up over the years from people who were. And also, actually, by speaking to a lot of the players he played at that time, because I've been very lucky to interview quite a lot of this 1970 Cup-winning side over the last year. Mm. But they could play football. That was a very attack-minded side.
Yes.
David Sexton had clearly designed a strategy of play to really make the most of the talents he had. And we were fast and we passed
swift,
quickly.
Very swift,
yeah,
indeed.
Very incisive, weren't we? And this is borne out by the match report by Tony Pawson, who says Wrecker Osgood is the title, which is a bit of a misnomer considering what he then writes. He says, this was billed as a ball player's convention and Chelsea ensured that skill predominated in spite of the pressures of fiery tempers and the harsh tackling. Once more, it was Osgood who settled the issue, striking with speed and certainty whenever the ball came to him near goal. The opening, blah, 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 blah. Appropriately, it was Cook, the most delicate player on the field, who set up these chances. Now, Charlie, I know quite a lot of people who are your kind of age, JK, who nearly always cite Charlie Cook as their all-time favourite Chelsea player. I kind of saw him play in the 70s on the telly and things, but I never really saw him at his prime, which would have been around now. Just how good was Charlie Cook, JK?
Well, I used to impersonate him all the time whenever I played football, which was all you did was your opponent came towards you and you had the ball and you just did sort of backwards and forwards jinx and then flicked the ball around and he just ran after it. And that was the way he tended to beat people. Now, I'm oversimplifying it. He was a wonderful hero. It was the speed. He had the kind of same thing that Hullett had, that ability to just sprint past you and move, and you didn't realise that, you know, he'd got the ball and he was past you. It wasn't that kind of thing of taking you on that Nevin used to do, and then flicking the ball past, and then kind of turning the ball around in a circle. It was slinky speed and little nudges of the shoulder, and he'd feint left and put the ball right and run after it past you. But yeah, and a wonderfully accurate crosser as well. It was an unbelievably slick side. It really was. With what the current team is missing, a kind of a power, an aggression from both Webb and Harris at the back, and a class from Dempsey, because Dempsey was a very good reader of the game and a very good header of the ball. It was a terrific side. Therefore, that's what was so annoying when it didn't quite all work. I know he got. What seemed to get in the way of Osgood, I think, playing for England, was his tendency to get booked. He had aggression as well. Osgood, he could be quite filthy, and I think fair enough, because everybody around him was filthy. But you got the impression that everybody was looking to find fault with Chelsea because of the reputation as King's Road
playboys.
Playboys, absolutely. There was a kind of northern jealousy of what was going on in the south.
Yes, definitely.
With Chelsea. So you were, you know, I remember being, oh, you're a Chelsea fan, are you? Yeah, they're all wanky. You know, it was that kind of approach to it.
A
bit like it is now, really.
I don't think it's ever left us, actually.
No, and I think the seeds of this kind of, Flash Harry thing that seems to follow Chelsea around was sown back then. And you know, the players were they played hard and they drank hard. You know, they were of a different ilk. Not just Chelsea players, all of them, except for Leeds United, who were incredibly regimented. And I think was it the year after that final that Leeds played Sunderland in the cup final?
No, three years later.
Nothing ever summed up the Leeds United of that time than the fact that when they were interviewed on the breakfast, you know, the day of the cup final against Sunderland, there they are in their blazers and their ties and everything like that. They go over to the Sunderland ones and they're just wearing their football tops, lazing around, having a can of beer. and that summed up the difference. It really was, you know, a kind of naughty boy thing that Chelsea had going back in 1970. You know, there was a reason the women fell for the Chelsea players, because they were bad boys. They had that reputation, and why not?
Swagger, like, swagger, mate.
Swagger.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Let's talk about the Flash Harry
thing. Goes way, way back before that, though. I mean, there's pre-World War One articles talking about the extravagant breakfast had by Chelsea players,
really?
And the fact that they had the audacity to kiss each other when they scored goals and things like that. So yeah, that's been attached to us since the very beginning.
There you go. Musical greats we were. Right, Watford-Chelsea semi-final played on the 14th of March, 1970. Kick-off, at 2:45, and it was at White Hart Lane. If you're going to win a semi-final, and I have to say I've been privileged to be at a semi-final where Chelsea have won 5-1, even more hilarious because it was against Spurs. But Chelsea did exactly the same to Watford, absolutely mullering them 5-1 in a astonishingly good second half performance, it has to be said, because we opened the scoring on 3 minutes with David Webb, and then Watford equalised on 12 minutes, and then it was all Chelsea in the second half. Yeah. Osgood on 58, Houseman 73, Hutchinson 75, Houseman 79. So were you at this, Jonathan?
No, I wasn't, because my dad didn't get a ticket. Because he was filming, so I didn't attend it.
Were you fed up with your dad because of that?
Slightly.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. And I just paced around for the whole of the afternoon, wanted to know what the result was, but not wanting to listen to it on the radio. I think I wanted to try. I do like trying to see, even if it was only 10 minutes of it on the box. I like then to just not know what the score is, just so it gives me kind of excitement. You know, I'm a bit weird like that. I still do that at the moment. If I haven't watched the game in the afternoon, if it's away, I won't ever listen to the radio, and I will wait until I can watch it at on Sky, even if it's only the half hour at the end of the day. So I like trying to feel that I'm watching a bit of it and not knowing the result. So.
Do you know what the press had to say? This is brilliant. I'm loving these press cuttings. I suspect everybody's listening is bored stupid, but I don't care because I like it. Right. I don't know what paper this was. It's Desmond Hackett, but it says lots of big kind of bold headlines. Here comes a goal that knocked the knockers. And now I love all the boob references in these headlines as well. Yeah. And now for Wembley, Chelsea can thank Housman. Now, this is really interesting considering what you've all been saying about good old Mary. When the jubilant fans of Chelsea have fully recovered from their celebrations and consequent hangovers, let them be honest and confess, we were wrong. Not about their proud boast that they would severely chastise Watford, but about their failure readily to recognise Peter Housman as one of the greatest players ever to wear the royal blue of Chelsea. Last season, Housman was almost brutally criticised by the crowds. Nor was he the most popular boy on the pitch early in the season. Suddenly, brilliantly, he struck up an understanding with Alan Hudson, who gets my vote for the best young player in Britain. Housman, almost a giveaway transfer player in 1966, is the reason why Chelsea go into their third FA Cup final. So there you go.
Well, he had a phenomenal score. I mean, he got six or seven goals that campaign.
Six.
Housman. Six was it? Yeah. I mean, you know, for a player that was would probably be described by Didier Deschamps as a water carrier in the sense of his contribution. You know, he was one of these unsung heroes. If you looked at the conversation that, you know, I've been involved in Mixlr, I mean, it was an absolute tragedy what happened to that man in the end. You know, and a death, you know, absolutely coated in scandal that was, you know, with a massive injustice on it, you know, and his contribution at Chelsea, you know, is legend. It's there, isn't it? I mean, without him, that campaign, who knows? And without his contribution, and I know we're about to come on to the final, you know, but that goal, as scrappy as it was, he bought the ticket at the lottery with that shot against Brake. So we'll move on to that in a minute. But, you know, I just want a little bit of credit there for Peter Housman, because, you know, he's, you know, a massively, influential player for Chelsea, and an absolutely tragic ending.
And yet they sold him when he was 26, which I didn't understand. I didn't get that. Once again, Sexton didn't feel that he was part, because they bought Weller, of course, subsequently.
Keith Weller. Who was from Leicester,
brilliant player, and he was much pacier than Housman ever was. But we'll get on to that. And this is poor old Alan Hudson, had played in every game up until the final, and then got injured.
Well, Jonathan, you are a legend because you're reading my mind. Because we played that game, and we had a few more league games after that. We then went on to beat Stoke City 1-0 at home. We beat Man United 2-1 at home. We then beat Sheffield Wednesday 3-1 at home. We then got absolutely mullered by Everton, who were in the process of becoming champions, 5-2. And then we played West Brom away. And, of course, West Brom were a decent side in those days. And, I mean, they had Jeff Astle up front. They had Asa Hartford, Tony Brown. They had Len Cantello. They had some good players. Anyway, we lost 3-1 to West Brom. And that, I'm afraid, chaps, is the match where Alan Hudson twisted his ankle. When the match report's actually pretty good. I'll just read this out, actually, because this is quite good. When Tony Brown hit the first vital goal of the match with a full-blooded volley from 20 yards after half an hour, Chelsea's young inside man, Alan Hudson, was lying injured on the touchline. He hobbled from the field and was replaced 7 minutes later by Bobby Tambling. Hudson has a twisted ankle, while Tambling pulled a hamstring. And scorer Hutchinson was suffering from bruised kidneys. Now, of course, Hudson didn't play again that season and cruelly missed out on an FA Cup final win. But so did Bobby Tambling. Now, it was interesting to hear what you're saying about Bobby, because you're right, JK, he was kind of on his way out. And when I interviewed him for the Chelsea special, he was still... I mean, he was gutted about missing 1970, but he knew he was, you know, unlikely to make the starting 11. He's still more gutted about losing to Spurs in the 67 final. But actually, that was Bobby Tamling's last game for Chelsea. So there you go. So it was Alan Hudson's last game of the season and Bobby Tamling's last game for Chelsea, JK.
Yeah. That makes great sense. But he wasn't the player that he had been. I remember him being just looking off the pace. I think he was injured. I think he'd had an injury at some stage in the season as well and never seemed to recover from it. Was that right? Do you remember that in the conversation you had with him?
Yeah. He did say that. His career at Chelsea kind of fizzled out, you know. And I mean, as you know, from what we were, you know, talking about earlier, I don't think he scored a goal that season, did he?
No.
Bobby Tamling, no goals.
Yeah.
And only six appearances, I think. So really hardly played. So, you know, he got a bit of he got five starts and two subs appearances. Then, of course, the one against West Brom was his last, and he came on for Alan Hudson. So a bit of a sad end for Bobby Tamling and a very tragic end for Alan Hudson, because only 11 days later, we played the final on the Saturday, the 11th of April at Wembley, of course, the very famous match. Now, you were at this one, weren't you, Jonathan?
Oh, yes.
Would you like to tell us all about it?
Well, we played in yellow socks and yellow piping, which allowed Leeds to play in their all-white outfit. And the pitch, as I said, had been a few months before, I think, in fact, 6 months before, had been used for the Horse of the Year show. It may have been longer. I think there are conflicting stories about this, but it was just a pudding and the ball didn't bounce, which affected the game immensely. The very first Leeds goal, everybody jumped up to defend, and I remember it went through McCready's legs because it just went along the ground, and I was sitting on the halfway line with my dad, and it was the usual very competitive set up. And when I watch it back on telly, I realise it's unbelievable, more competitive than I ever remember, with people sliding in and the referee standing most of the time in the centre circle in his long shorts, just not really keeping up with the game, but it didn't really seem to matter, and would always just go up and tell somebody off after they'd scythed somebody to the ground. And it was unbelievably competitive, and we scored our goal with a kind of pot shot that Housman took that similarly went along the ground and Sprake palmed into the corner, and everybody was very rude about Sprake, but to be fair to him, you know, the ball hadn't bounced at all. And then with the game heading, if I remember rightly, towards it looked as if it might be extra time or something. I can't remember actually what happened. Did they score and we? Oh Jesus, was it when the extra time they scored, didn't they, in extra time, because it was 1-1.
No, it was all full time.
We didn't get to extra time, did it? There wasn't extra time.
No, it did. It was 2-2.
That's right. They scored. That's right. I remember now. Yeah, they scored.
Well, I'll tell you. Hang on a minute. Charlton put them 1-0 up on 21 minutes, yeah. If you remember. That was the error.
Yeah.
Then we equalised on 41 with Peter Housman again. And then Mick Jones scored on 83 minutes. And then, of course, that wonderful cross, very instinctive ball by Johnny Hollins. And Hutch scores to make it 2-2 on 86 minutes. And then they played extra time, but they didn't score any more goals.
A woman in front of me shouted out, come on, Chelsea, you never win anything. Come on, you're letting us all down. And Hutchinson scored immediately. I remember that.
Oh, Tony, what are your memories of the Wembley part one?
Part one. Well, you've got the pitch. You've got the fact that, you know, I will always be struck by the contrast of the all white versus the all blue of the two teams. They had iconic players. Mick Jones was an absolute warrior. I think he played
later the lead guitarist for the Clash. Of course,
and I think he actually played. And we were going to get to the replay, but I seem to remember he played that with a dislocated shoulder or something for a lot of the game. But he, you know, though that team. I mean, you had the pitch, which I always thought was the Horse of the Year show, but it would be unplayable today. So credit to those players for playing on something that's worse than probably any pitch you or I have ever played on. You know, even over the park, it was that bad. But, you know, I went into it naively without the fear that you get over many years of supporting the team and the disappointment. I was a bit like one of these, and bear with me here, you know, like if you were to go to an island and there was a species of mammal living on that had never seen you before, they wouldn't be scared of you. Because they wouldn't know that you were there to hunt them or anything, would they? And it was like that. I didn't know the fear of football. I didn't know the fear that it could instill. I just knew the excitement of it being the cup. The cup to an 8-year-old boy in 1970, a few months away from his 9th birthday, and the excitement of a World Cup coming up. That whole thing was it was sheer excitement, and the cup was bigger than the league. To a young lad at that time, the league was who cares about that?
For everybody at the time, it's possibly
possibly JK. I'm
the world, but
yeah, I can only get because it was the biggest watched game. It was the only game, as I recall, other than England games, that was shown live on television. I don't think any of them, maybe the League Cup was, but certainly...
No, that wasn't.
But no league games were shown live back in them days. You got the big match and you got Match of the Day. That was it.
Yeah.
There was no live Except league.
The FA Cup was, yeah, with all
yeah.
the...
Yeah. The and I just remember, the big story for me was in the replay, but that game, I've got it on DVD. It's spectacular to watch because you're looking at it and it's almost looking through the prism of these older eyes, a different game to what we do now. Back passes were allowed. You only had one substitute, and the brutality. I'm pretty sure. I don't know whether they just had the yellow and red card system or whether you just got booked and then sent off.
You got booked, right, okay.
Your
finger wagged at you, and when you got injured, the rope came on with a sponge and the bucket.
That's right, yes, yeah. And so it was a very different, and again, I don't care if people are making, accusing me of over-romanticising it, but it was that kind of, and we saw it then as very modern football when you compared it to what you'd seen of the pictures of the 50s and the black and white footage of games then. This was, it was on my TV, it wasn't in colour, but there was a growing number of people with colour TVs at that time, mainly through renting it or whatever, because it was still a fairly novel thing. So there was so much, but it was this thing, Chidge, the whole day. It was that special. It was that special. The whole day, television, BBC One, turned over to the FA Cup.
From 9 o'clock in the morning, Tony. Yes. It was all on. You had stupid things like quiz programs and everything else. Go on, Jonathan.
I was. My dad was a celebrity involved in that, and so was in the build-up, and was interviewed, and I was with him. And we were in the, I think it was on ITV as well. I think they were always competing with each other at the time.
Yeah. And
he was on that side of it. And I remember Paddy Creran was there. And Paddy Creran got annoyed with me tapping my wine glass. I had orange juice in it and snatched it out of my hand and put it on the side. I remember that.
There's one other thing to say about it, Chidge, as well. As I recall, I don't know the exact stat, but it was the first FA Cup final that had been drawn since about 1912 or something. There had been no cup final that had been drawn and replayed. So that the game against United at United at Old Trafford, would that replay, it was the first time it happened in 50 or 60 years. It was something along them lines. I don't know, but I just remember it was special because of that alone. Let alone the fact that it wasn't replayed at Wembley, it was replayed at Old Trafford.
That's right. Well, we're going to get to Old Trafford in a minute, but before, and I just want to say one thing, Jonathan. Paddy Creran's always been a bastard. I had to work with him once. I had to work with him once in 2006 or something, 2005, and he tried to. We had agreed a fee of £500 or something, and he tried to stiff us for £1,000 and refused to take part until we paid him. He tried to, there's a word for that. I think it's called extortion.
Yeah.
And he tried to get Peter Reid on his side, and Peter Reid stuck up for us. And I've always loved Peter Reid for that. Oh, and do you know what Peter Reid said? He said, hey Paddy, I don't know what you're talking about, because if I wasn't here, I'd be on the Soch. I love Peter Reid. Peter Reid is a gentleman, but Paddy Creran is a mank bastard and always has been. Anyway, moving swiftly along, I'm just going to quickly read you out the newspaper coverage of the first part of the FA Cup final in 1970. Benetti, man of courage. But it says this Desmond Hackett again. He gets about, doesn't he? Just say...
Dreadful, wasn't he?
Just say lucky old Chelsea, and that could well be the story of one of the most fiercely and bravely contested FA Cup finals in the whole 99 years of the competition. Say Leeds United were so incomparably better that Chelsea should have done the decent thing and conceded the match. But if you say that, you cruelly ignore the courage of Chelsea. Teams of lesser spirit could have broken down and not been condemned for surrender. For much of this storming action, Chelsea had only scant idea of what was taking place. For much of the time, they were a team called Peter Benetti. He was an athletic James Bond. He was in every possible trouble, exposed by the frailty of his own colleagues, endlessly harassed by the hard-shooting, brilliantly regimented men from Leeds. Benetti's language was as fast and fierce as his reactions. I cannot recall any team in which one man showed so much courage, so much skill. What about that? And quite right too with Peter Benetti. And he was equally courageous in the final, of course, Old Trafford, which was played a couple of weeks later, would you believe, on my mum's birthday, bless her heart. And it was on a Wednesday, kicked off at 7:30. So it was an evening kickoff. First time it had been replayed, as Tony was saying, since God knows when. And of course, we all remember this match hugely. I mean, even Alex will remember this match for the violence and the thuggery meted out. But I think this is the key thing, isn't it? Because actually that it alludes to it in that previous match and that paper cutting, that basically Chelsea would not back down to a very dirty, violent,
intimidate all the time, Leeds. That's
yeah,
the point.
Have you heard
the Leeds perspective? This is brilliant. So I have a friend, Clive, who's dirty Leeds to the core, and he's still bitching about how mean one of our players was to Charlton in that game. I was like, are you shitting me?
Webb.
Did you see anything else of that game, or are you just insane? Yeah. Bitchy. Well, if it wasn't for that, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, right, okay. All right then, Clive.
Yeah.
Right. Andy Willis has just said something very, very good on Mixlr here. He says, still the only team to come back from being behind three times in an FA Cup final.
Yeah.
There you go. Now, Jonathan, I'm going to ask you first because I know you were there. And, of course, Tony was watching it on TV. So, Jonathan, your memories of that match?
Of which one? Of the replay?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what had happened in the first one was that David Webb had been completely taken to the cleaners by Andy Gray. Eddie Gray. Andy Gray, slightly later on by Eddie Gray. And so they had to tactically change. So they put Ron Harris on him. And funnily enough, he didn't really get much opportunity to do anything because he was lying on his backside most of the time. But Benetti was, I went up with my father and I was supposed to be playing in a trial game to see if I get into the first 11 in the cricket at school. And I said I was ill and missed it. So consequently didn't get into the first 11 until halfway through the season. But it was worth it just for that. And we arrived and we were just slightly late. And my dad managed to park I don't know how we did it. We got into a car park very near the stadium. And the only reason we got there was because my dad was a well-known actor of the period. And and he just went up to the barrier and the commissionaire came up and said, have you got a place? A parking place? And he said, well, actually, he said, oh, no, Mr. Kidd, come in. We can park over there, park wherever you like. Fantastic. Great. Good. Lovely to see you. Thank you. Watching the game. Yes, I am, said my dad. Oh, great. Superb. Right? Park over there. So he parked and another bloke came up and said, who's this bloke then? Why have you let him park there? He said, it's Brian Kidd's fucking brother, he said. Brian Kidd, of course, being a footballer at the time who played for Man United. And
yes.
Of course it wasn't, but that's how we got right next to the ground and got away early. But not early, but you know, decently. But and of course they scored first and Benetti got done very early on, so was on one leg, and you didn't have a goalie substitute at that time, so he had to carry on. And they set about protecting him, but there was a kind of revenge motive about the Chelsea at the time. There was a lot of off the ball. Remember Charlton getting clattered by Osgood, and that wonderful kick by McCready against Bremner's head, which he was apparently just apparently just supposedly going for the ball, but I thought the ball was actually on the floor at the time, so I didn't quite understand. Perhaps Bremner had fallen onto the ground, that he was kicking his head on the ground, but no, it was at head height. But and then with 10 minutes to go, once again, you just thought, well, Chelsea have got to get back into this. The sublime Charlie Cook centre and the wonderful iconic Peter Osgood header to make it 1-1. And then, as Tony has said, back into extra time again, and the ball is thrown. In fact, Chelsea are much more powerful in the whole of extra time. The boot was on the other foot completely. I don't know how they managed to do that from a stamina point of view, possibly, but they just came more and more into the game and scored off with Hutchinson throw that I think hit Webb on the stomach and went in, and they held out, and it was blissful, to say the least.
So, Tony, what are your memories of the match?
I mean, there's so many. You know, ensconced safely, you know, in my old house, 43 Gossip Gardens, Hayes, Middlesex, sat there with my dad. You know, just levels of excitement beyond anything, because you know, I'd got the taste. I was like the first time heroin crack addict. I'd had that first cup final and a draw, and it was just there. And I'm smiling as I'm saying this, but it was such a magnificent game of football, and yet absolutely so dirty. I mean, you know, I think when it was re-refereed on TV, I think. It was David Ellery, I think. You know, we ended up with six players and Leeds ended up with five or something like that. Under the current rules, you'd have just had the game abandoned. But I think it was just the persistence of Chelsea. This was we've sat on this fan cast and we've talked about Munich and all sorts of great games where the Chelsea sides that we've watched in the last 15, 20 years have had that never say die spirit, and that's what this lot had in spades, in bucket loads. And my abiding memory is that, you know, that Leeds were, you know, a goal up. They then kind of worked out that they were going to consolidate that. They weren't particularly adventurous or anything, but they were ruthless, at points, like a team of Makalelis there to ruin and spoil the game and do whatever it took to stop Chelsea, who were more of a flair team. You know, we definitely had the players for the flair and everything. And I think I've said this one before, but, you know, as an eight-year-old boy, my treat, I was allowed every night, at some point in the night, I would say to my dad, can I have two biscuits? And off I'd go, get me two biscuits, go into the and what I'd do is I'd actually get four, one in each pyjama pocket, and go back in with two biscuits and then sort of like, you know, whatever. And I went out, but I was crying. I was actually crying. I was so upset because I couldn't see that we were going to get back into the game. You know, it was probably about, you know, well, I'm looking at the newspaper report now, so it must have been about 76 minutes, 77 minutes when I just thought, no, we're not going to do this. And crying, upset, this was it. The fear and the upset, it had got into me, you know, and it had become part and parcel of, you know, I was now a football fan, fully blooded after watching the bloody cup final at Wembley. And just hearing my dad shout, you probably all remember your dad's voice was the loudest voice you'd ever heard. When your dad shouted, you were either in big trouble or something serious had happened. You know, that was generally the way. And I just sort of got the biscuits and ran back in, and he was on the ceiling because Osgood had scored, you know, and because that cross had come in from Charlie Cook. And on the replay, and I just remember being so excited. It probably took about 10 minutes before I was able to sit down and watch the game again. And then you couldn't get me away. You could not get me away from that screen. And, you know, at the end, you know, that moment is seared into my memory forever, that throw from Hutchinson and the way the ball went across the goal. And, you know, Webb, did he get his head to it? I mean, it was between, he sort of like bundled, but it was his moment where he got in front of Jack Charlton, I think. There was no love lost between the teams, as I recall, certainly not between Jack Charlton and any of the Chelsea players, for sure. And then it goes in, and you just, yeah, I don't know. That was, you know, that was as prominent in my life as you could have tattooed me with Chelsea then, there and then, aged eight, because there was never going to be anybody else. ever after that, you know, and celebrating, you know, into the night, whatever, with my dad. I just seem to remember that my dad was ambivalent about football, I guess. You know, he kind of liked it. He liked to have it on, but he didn't really have a team. But I think that night when his eight-year-old boy was a fully fledged Chelsea fan, you know, that was my dad's team as well from that point onwards. I'll get quite emotional about it because it is.
I can tell.
Massive moment in my life, and yeah, to the day I die. You know, if I get cruelly struck down by dementia, I hope that memory is one that is expunged last of all before shuffling off this mortal coil.
Well, there you go. I mean, it's just like I don't know how Alex feels about this, but it's lovely to hear you two old codgers talk about something that Alex and I were not able to take part in, really. But I mean, even without that not being there, Alex, I mean, it seems seared on my memory, even if I wasn't there, because I grew up with people who were there and who loved it. And I remember, Alex, that I had a great, well, Phil, Big Phil, Psycho Phil. You know, he used to gather around with mates and they would not watch the replay of the 70 final. They had an LP, an album, a record of the commentary, and they would gather around on April the 29th every year until we won it again, listening to it. You know, this is how much it meant to people that were there. Right, just going to wrap this up. I've got to read you this. This is actually a paper cutting from before the match. Right, the day of the match by Ken Jones.
Oh, Ken Jones. I've got that one in front of me as well. Yeah,
he's an absolute football legend. Yes. And this is what he said before the match. Right, it will not be a pretty match. Well, actually, that's a boring bit. I'm not going to read that. I expect it to be hard, intimidatory, perhaps bitter, possibly violent, and there will not be an easy winner. It could even drag on once again into a wearying period of extra time with players pressured into final demoralising error through sheer tiredness. It may all turn on the decision that Chelsea manager Dave Sexton will take this morning when he runs through the last talk to his team this season. He must decide between letting David Webb have another chance against the magical skills with which Eddie Gray came close to destroying him at Wembley and giving the job to someone else. Well, if you want to know about good management, people, what Dave Sexton did, as Jonathan was alluding to earlier, was that he played Ron Harris in David Webb's position. And Ron, after 3 minutes, well, I don't actually know how many minutes it was, but early in the game, he absolutely took Eddie Gray to the cleaners. I mean, he just took him out. And Gray was hobbled for the rest of the match and basically gave Chopper a very, very wide berth. And it effectively neutralised Leeds. And I think it also kind of gave rise to the absolute violence we saw in the match. But I think that one decision by Dave Sexton, in a sense, probably had as much to do with us winning the FA Cup that year than anything else. It's an interesting thought to kind of wrap it up on. Now,
also, Chidge, just let me add in the end that Ellery said nine people left on the pitch.
Right, yeah, okay, yeah. 5-4 then, bloody hell.
Webb changed shirts and wore a white shirt and wasn't allowed up to lift the cup and get a medal because the commissioner thought he was elite.
That's right. All right, we've got to wrap this up because we are massively... I'm even beginning to think maybe not to do the emails, but on the other hand, there's bugger all else happening, and if you don't mind, then I'm up for it. But time for a very, very quick plug. And it's actually very relevant because I was saying earlier, you know, I very luckily got to interview a large proportion of that 1970 Cup winning squad, including Bobby Tambling, who didn't make it, Chopper Harris, Tommy Baldwin, Johnny Boyle, to name but a few of them. In fact, those are the only ones I did interview from the 70 side. And of course, I did that for the Chelsea Special, which is a whole series of podcasts with very long interviews with all of these guys, plus Johnny Bumstead, Gary Chivers, Colin Pates, Canners, and also Danny Harkins, who was the kind of the self-proclaimed leader of the Shed. Although actually he wasn't the self-proclaimed. He never really called himself that, but he's one of the original Shed boys. They really are good. I mean, you know, there's one thing listening to us lot waffle on about these old matches, but if you talk to the players that were actually in them, you get a completely different level of insight, and they're very honest and forthright. They love Chelsea and they love us. So these will be the best £2.99 you will ever spend, and that is... less than the price of Costa coffee. So, you know, it ain't that expensive. Now, you can download all the interviews at chelseaspecial.podbean.com. You basically go into Podbean, go to the chelseaspecial.podbean.com site. You click on buy single episode now. So you scroll down and you can find each one there. Buy single episode now, and that'll take you straight to the link by which you pay, usually via PayPal. And then you can download it and listen to it. And we've also got a website, chelseaspecial.com. We're on Twitter at Chelsea_special. And of course, we're on Facebook as Chelsea Special. It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is, that's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van, unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.